Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Welcome to the Insomnia Project. Sit back, relax, and listen as we have a conversation about the mundane. Although I don't know how mundane this episode is going to be. At the very least, just listen and enjoy. Thank you for joining us.
I'm Marco Timpano, and we have a special guest today. Fellow podcaster, I want to welcome Edward Russell to the podcast. Welcome, Edward.
Hello, Marco. It's nice to be here.
Now, this is our first podcast where we're reaching out over the pond. We've had some episodes where we had some American guests, so thank you for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
We have a ton of UK listeners, so I'm happy to be recording with someone who's in the UK. One of the reasons I am so excited is Edward Russell, amongst all the other things he does, is a fantastic podcaster with a great podcast.
You know the right things to say, Marco.
Well, every once in a while I get it right. But I'm just going to tell our listeners about your podcast. And I may have mentioned it before on this podcast. And if you haven't had a chance to listen, I really recommend you do because it is fantastic. It's called Inside the Groove. And it's a podcast that dissects Madonna's most famous songs and discusses how they were written, recorded. You get to hear demos, isolated tracks, studio sessions, a whole bunch of information. And what I love about this podcast is you don't have to be a Madonna fan to truly appreciate the focus that this podcast has on music and the music of one of the world's greatest singers, whether or not you enjoy her music, but certainly a contributor to the music industry. So if you enjoy that in particular, the dissection and picking apart of isolated vocals and drum tracks and whatnot, this is definitely a podcast you need to check out. I hope I did that justice, Edward.
You've done it better than I could have done. Well done. Thank you.
Thank you. I discovered your podcast through another podcast that a friend of mine hosts. His name is Bill Antoniou, and he has a podcast called Bad Gay Movies, Bitchy Gay Men.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I've heard of it. They've been in touch. Yes.
And at the end of their podcast, they always talk about things that they enjoy. And Bill happened to mention your podcast. And I was like, I'm a fan of Madonna's music. Let me check it out. And I got hooked immediately.
Well, I'm pleased to hear that. But you're quite right. Obviously, the focus is on Madonna and Madonna's songs. But I think if you're just interested in pop music or, you know, how music is put together, it's quite interesting. It's not too technical, but we do talk about things that I think a lot of fans of music don't really think about. So, for example, there's some of her early songs that have a very specific drum machine sound. So I talk a bit about the history of that drum machine and play other songs that have got it. And so it's a way of learning a bit about musical history, as well as, of course, learning about Madonna and how she wrote the songs and, you know, all the stuff around it. So, yeah, I think it's quite original and quite different from anything else out there at the moment.
Most definitely. You know, I have to say, not since Dolly Parton's America have I enjoyed a music podcast or a podcast that focuses on music and songwriters as much as yours.
I'm so pleased to hear that, because I kind of started it really as something to do. And people told me they liked it. And then lots of people told me they really liked it. And then it has become quite popular. So, you know, any positive praise, it just motivates me. And you'll know this as well, Marco, from your podcast. When people give you praise, it just makes you want to do more work and better work, I guess.
But you're a busy guy. So what got you into podcasting?
I am busy, and sometimes I don't have time to sleep, let alone even if I could sleep a full night through. I started a podcast at the beginning of lockdown here in the UK. So, well, like many countries around the world, we went into lockdown towards the end of March, and it was quite a severe lockdown in the UK to start with for a few months. And, you know, I had a lot of time on my hands, and I needed something to do. And coincidentally, the Madonna song Vogue, probably one of her most famous tracks, if not her most famous, had just turned 30.
Sure.
And there were a few articles about the song, about its cultural impact, and maybe a little bit about the recording of it itself, but that wasn't the focus. And I know all this stuff because I'm a Madonna fan and I've read lots of interviews over the years. I'm also an amateur music producer as well. So every time I've read something about the recording of her tracks, I've really absorbed it. And I thought, well, it's a shame no one is telling the story of how it was written and it was recorded, because it's a fascinating story. It was recorded as a B-side. It was kind of a test to pair Madonna up with the producer Shep Pettibone, who'd remixed a few of her tracks, and he was given a tiny budget of $5,000, which seems a lot these days, but back then that was nothing, because that would be like 2 days in a studio. So it was a tiny budget, and I know that they recorded it in Manhattan in a basement because that's all they could afford. And that feels really strange to think that Madonna was probably her most famous at the time, but she's really into that kind of underground, literally, way of doing it. So I thought, I know, why don't I fill my time by doing a podcast, a one-off, where I talk about the recording of Vogue and see how it goes.
So it was only going to be about Vogue, that it was going to just be a one-episode podcast, just a tester?
I guess so. I mean, okay. In the back of my head, I knew that if it did work, I might try a couple of other songs. Now, something that your listeners might not be aware of is that over the years, lots of what we call multi-tracks have leaked. Now, you don't have to know too much about music to know that all the elements in a pop song or any song are recorded separately. So the vocals, the bass, the guitars, the synth, the piano are all recorded on separate tracks. You know, anything up to, well, it can be hundreds, but back in the 80s and 90s, it was generally about 20, 25 tracks that they were recorded on. Now, these have leaked over the years, and I don't really know why, but you can get multi-tracks of classic tracks, like by the Jacksons, by Whitney Houston, by Madonna, of course, and lots of great artists. And if, like me, you're interested in how music's put together, I can sit there and listen to, you know, I can listen to just the cymbals on a Prince track and go, wow, that's amazing. Yeah. And I find that fascinating. Anyway, I had a few of these of Madonna, and there's about 30 of her songs that have leaked in this way, including some of the really big hits, like Express Yourself and Like a Virgin, and even up to modern times. So I thought I'll start with Vogue and see how it goes. And I put it out there, and I did a bit of marketing around it because that's my background. So it got some attention, and I think within a day, it may have had 100 or 200 listens. And I had no idea if that was good or not.
Good or bad, of course.
And I thought it wasn't great. So I asked on Twitter some of my friends what they thought, and they were like, oh, that's really good. I don't get that many in a month. And I was quite surprised at that. But what I've since learned is there are kind of two tiers of podcasts. And again, you'll know this. There are the people that just, you know, them and a mate will do a podcast about movies and put it out, and they'll be happy if 8 people listen to it. And then there are the podcasts that are successful and they make it into the charts and stuff like that, and they of course get thousands of listens per episode, and you've got the top tier that will get 10,000 in the first week or what have you. So I was thinking, okay, is this successful? I don't know, I'll do another episode. But it wasn't about the success of the number of listeners that really made me realize I might be doing something right. It was kind of the feedback I was getting, because because Madonna fans, and I'm sure there are fans of all sorts of things, especially music that are like this, are quite discerning of other fans that do stuff, perhaps a bit territorial. And I was waiting for somebody to be slagging me off or being negative about it. And it just didn't happen. And I would get messages from people because I created a Twitter account and an Instagram account. And I would get messages from people saying, I love it. It's really good. And you're really, really good. And I had no idea what I was doing because I don't listen to podcasts myself. I maybe have heard three or four.
Your husband before. Does, I understand, right?
He does. Well, he's a big podcast listener. So I was able to get his advice about what worked and what didn't work. He said, keep it short. He said, you know, he listens to a RuPaul podcast and it's 2.5 hours long. And he said, it's too much.
Right.
So he gave me lots of all these tips and stuff. Anyway, I could go into lots of detail, but the short story is within a very short time, the podcast became pretty popular. And now here we are many months later and it's really popular. So its category is music commentary and it's regularly in the top 10 or top 20 music commentary on iTunes and Spotify. And that feels good. But when you actually think how many thousands of podcasts are made every day, all the people making, it's a real achievement. And I'm really pleased with that. I'm a bit competitive. so that makes me feel really great. And of course, it's really motivating as well. But the thing that I think really resonates is I get messages of people, Madonna fans, who go, do you know what? This is what I've been wanting for so long. I love Madonna, but everybody always talks about her image and the things that she does that are outrageous, her hair color. They never talk about the music. So I think it's come along at the right time.
Your podcast gives a lot of respect to the artists that here we're talking about Madonna. And the reason I know that it's a great podcast is as I listen to it, I hope to hear other podcasts or I hope you create other podcasts on other artists in this sort of style. So like you mentioned Prince, I would love to go down a Prince podcast where we sort of take his demos, his tracks and really examine them, or Dolly Parton, as I mentioned before, or, you know, George Michael, you name it, a bunch of artists who are true artists. And sometimes they get eclipsed by their image or what they did in the 80s or 90s.
It's so true. And everybody's so quick to criticize Madonna. People very rarely want to give her any positive approval. And I think there's also this thing that's followed her around her career, that she is not particularly creative, that she sings other people's songs, etc. And the truth is that, you know, a song like a Prayer, she wrote in about 3 minutes. In about 3 hours. She's not that good.
Right.
But she wrote, her and her collaborator on that song, he sat down at a piano, kicked out some chords. She came up with a melody, came up with a lyric. They then went into a booth. He'd put down a drum track and she recorded her vocal and she never sang it again. That was the vocal that ended up on the song that was number one and, you know, has been one of her biggest hits for 30 years. And it's when you can share stories like that that people realize, oh, okay, so yeah, she is clever. She is clever. And do you know what? Yeah, she has sung other people's songs as well. And she is no Mariah Carey or Whitney Houston when it comes to her vocal abilities. But she's very creative. And I think people have enjoyed finding that out because I think a lot of Madonna fans themselves didn't know that. So it's been nice to share those stories, I think.
Yes, I certainly learned a couple of things from your podcast, and one that she doesn't give herself enough credit when it comes to her songwriting. And I think as a result, we don't think of her as a songwriter.
It's very true. People think of Madonna as being really confident, and she is in so many ways, but she's also very insecure. And it's kind of her insecurity that's made her what she is. So she knows she's not the most beautiful woman in the world. She knows that she hasn't got the best voice in the world, but nonetheless, she has this drive and ambition to succeed. And that's kind of made her work harder than other people. You know, Whitney Houston could sing a song and make it sound effortless. And it kind of was. She just had that, the way she was built inside. Right. Her voice just sounded fantastic. And I'm not saying that she didn't work very hard. And she didn't train very hard. Of course she did. But she had a natural ability. Madonna it's an unnatural ability that she has. And I think some people think, therefore, that she's manufactured. So it's great to be able to discuss the truth behind all that.
You talk about her performance in her songs, and I think that's something that separates Madonna from other people. There might be a technically great singer, but they can't bring that performance or that emotion to the song that Madonna can.
It's really true, and I think it's really interesting when you look at Madonna's abilities in film, because we know that she's not been particularly successful in the movie industry.
Sure.
And, you know, I like Madonna, but I agree that she's not the best actor in the world. But yet her performances and her songs are brilliant. If you listen to some of those 80 songs, when her singing really was not where it is now, because she did a lot of vocal training in the 90s for Evita and it changed her voice. But back then, you know, she was very high pitched and there was a lot of strain in her voice. But you listen to the performance on a song like Open Your Heart or Live to Tell, and there's so much emotion in it, which women didn't really do back then. Women in the music industry, with a few exceptions of some of the punk artists, or, you know, I'm thinking like people like Patti Smith.
Sure.
They were all technically great singers. They all had very beautiful voices, like, you know, Barbara Streisand, or, you know, even Dolly Parton, who I would say is a very creative person, as you, I'm sure, agree. But she has a very technically great voice as well. Madonna was all about the emotion. And yeah, I think that's what's fascinating about her, without a doubt.
Have you ever met Madonna?
Oh, do you know what? People ask me this question, and I find if I say I prefer not to answer, it really freaks them out.
No, I'm cool with whatever answer you wish to give here. I can tell you I've met her.
Yeah.
I was able to go to the press conference when she did A Ray of Light here in Toronto, and I had a press pass. And I was doing it for a university radio station. So my credentials were sketchy at best, let's say, but I managed to get into the press conference. So I got there early and I sat right in the front and I thought to myself, the only way I'm going to be able to ask a question is if I'm first. And so as soon as they came in with the microphone, my hand darted straight up and the person who was walking with the microphone happened to be right next to me. She made the mistake of giving me the microphone. And so I got to ask two questions, both in succession, and then she took the microphone away. But I did get to ask her a couple of questions, and I got to correct Madonna because she called me Mark, and I said, no, my name is Marco. And she was very gracious about it, and she's just captivating in a way that's hard to describe.
Well, as I said, I find it kind of funny to tease people about it, and I don't know why. It's kind of a sick delight to have, but I've heard very similar experiences about how when you are talking to her, she just doesn't break eye contact, and that she's very, you know why she's one of the most famous people in the world. She has something very particular about her, as, you know, a lot of famous people do. I've managed to work with and meet and perhaps even be friends with lots of what you might call celebrities. And there's a reason why some people really stand out from the crowd.
I want to dip into things that you do, you know, in your daily life that aren't Madonna related.
Oh, I've done all sorts of things, Marco. I started my career in the music publishing industry, but that was a long time ago. And then I moved into television. I worked for BBC for a very long time, 17 years. And I worked there originally for Top of the Pops, which was our big music TV show that ran for 40 years here in the UK. You may have even heard of it. I don't know.
But yes, I have. Yeah.
Indeed, it was very popular. And I worked there doing digital content. And this is back in the days when digital content wasn't what it was now. We're talking about the turn of the century, where it was very much more basic and you didn't have social media in the way that you have now.
Sure.
And then I changed jobs to work on Doctor Who. Now, I know you know Doctor Who because Canadian Broadcasting Company partly funded it. So, and I'm sure it's quite popular there.
Most of what?
I worked on that show for 12 years and I was brand manager of Doctor Who, which was fantastic because that's a television program I grew up loving. And then to be on that side of the show where my job was sort of like looking after everything around the show, not doing all the stuff like the websites or the merchandise or anything, but looking after the people that did, sort of acting like, if you imagine how an orchestral conductor sort of conducts all the talented people, that was my job, but for the stuff around Doctor Who. And that was brilliant. And I worked on the show for a very long time. And so that's amazing. the book I'm writing at the moment. I'm writing my memoirs of my time working on Doctor Who.
So great.
Yeah, it's an interesting story, and it's taken me a lot longer than I expected. And if my publisher's listening, don't worry, there is another draft on the way. But there are so many stories about the making of the show while I was working on it, and lots of interviews with the famous people, the actors that played the Doctor and the writers. But what me and the team that did our job what we did was very interesting too, and people just don't know those stories. So it's nice to be able to tell those stories. So yeah, I don't think it's going to be a bestseller, Marco, but I think some people might find it interesting.
Oh, I'm sure you'll have a lot of Doctor Who fans lining up for that. Might we see that this year in 2020?
I think we might see it early next year.
Okay.
It's getting there. But I think part of the reason why it's been delayed is because a lot of the intention was to interview the people that I work with to sort of remind me of stories. And that hasn't really been possible in the way I would have liked.
Okay.
And so I would originally wanted to have brought it out later this year and gone to some conventions, etc., to promote it.
Right,
so
of course.
I'm going to hold back in the hope that maybe I can do that next year. We'll see.
If you know a Doctor Who fan, definitely pre-order the book. Is it called The Trip of a Lifetime, The Making of...
Yes, of Modern Doctor Who, Trip of a Lifetime. Okay. It's published by Obverse Books, or it will be. And I'm sure that when the time's right, you'll hear about it, because I'm quite a good self-promoter. So I'll be making lots of noise.
Let me know, because I'll make sure to add it on our show notes so that when people hear this podcast in the future, they can just click on it and find the resource. Tell us something that surprised you that came out of one of your episodes.
Oh, that's very interesting. I think the thing that struck a few chords, and I already knew this, but I put it out in that very first podcast, and lots of people didn't know, is that In Vogue, that very famous song, a couple of other songs are buried into the mix. So, for example, I'm not going to try singing, but there's a little bit that happens between each of the choruses on Vogue, where it's sort of a piece of music. That's actually the intro to the song Lucky Star, Slow Down. So on Lucky Star, it's more sort of that's the most singing you're going to get from me. But so a few other podcasts I've done, when I've listened to the multi-tracks, I've discovered a few other little things as well, tiny little things. And it depends perhaps on your listeners knowing the songs really well, but there's a very famous song of hers from the 1980s called Live to Tell.
Of course.
Which is a big 80s ballad and one of her best songs. And it's a fascinating song because it should never have been a hit single, because it's about 6 minutes long. And in the middle, it sort of has a breakdown where nothing much happens.
Yeah.
When you listen to the multi-track of it, you can hear the producer, Pat Leonard, in the background counting. And he's counting Madonna in, and he's sort of counting down. I think he's counting bars. And then he sort of goes, 3, 2, 1. And then you hear go, If I Ran Away. So it's just really those little things that don't make it into the actual final track. It's fascinating to hear.
It's fascinating to hear. It's fascinating to learn when we listen to your podcast. I can say that. Sorry, I just interrupted you.
No, that's fine. That's absolutely fine. Do you know what the biggest thing I've learned from doing this podcast, though, is just how lovely people are. And maybe you get that with your podcast as well, because I think sometimes in this modern day, especially on social media, we come across people whose opinions are difficult to deal with. But actually, when you're talking about something that's not politics or not the current health situation, and talking about something that people are interested in, it's so lovely, and people are so passionate about things. And I'm sure you get that, but certainly I've discovered people are beyond passionate about Madonna. And I think there's a perception that fans of, whether it be music artists or you know, movies or something like that, are a bit crazy. And, you know, maybe they are.
Right.
Hey, I worked on Doctor Who for 12 years. I know that kind of the very eager fan. But a lot of these people, being a fan is not just about loving everything that somebody might do, for example. And a lot of fans of Madonna like to discuss the stuff that didn't work And I think that's a really healthy attitude to have if you're a fanatic of a musical artist or whoever. And it's not that they want to slag it off, but they like to discuss things such as, you know, maybe this wasn't the right single choice, or, you know, maybe she shouldn't have worked with that producer, or, you know, that concert is, maybe she had laryngitis or something. And it's really great, and it's nice to be able to have those healthy conversations. So I've kind of discovered a whole network of people that I chat with on social media now, which is great, really refreshing.
It is really lovely. I've got great fans, and I'll get emails from people who listen to the podcast who tell me they listen for their anxiety and it's really helped. And that wasn't the intention of this podcast, but it reaches so many people. And it's so lovely to hear these kind of things from listeners, I have to say.
Well, I had no idea your podcast existed. And actually, when you contacted me, I wasn't sure if it was a joke. Because I read about your podcast and I thought, hang on a minute, are you trying to say that my podcast is going to bore people if we talked about it and they're going to fall asleep? But of course, I looked into it a bit more and I understand more about what it's out. But I don't want to say that I suffer from insomnia, because that feels defeatist. So what I will say is I don't need an awful lot of sleep. So I do understand those people that wake up in the night or maybe can't get to sleep, that possibly need something to tune their mind in. Because when I have nights, and they're very frequent, when I can't sleep, my mind is racing. And that's probably why I have a problem sleeping, because I'm playing things that have happened in the day or possibly going to happen the next day. So I really respect what you're doing here, because sometimes you just need to zone out and put yourself into somebody else's world.
So thank you.
So I think what you're doing is great. And hopefully somebody's listening to this, and in the nicest way possible, it's sending them into a deep, deep sleep.
You know, you have such a calming voice too. You know, there's so many conversations one can have, and there are episodes of my podcast that really resonate with people. For example, a friend recently said that they can't listen to the badminton episode because it really gets me excited. She's a fan of badminton. And I'm like, I never thought that would be the case. So where I'm sure there's listeners who are listening right now saying, I love Madonna and I love hearing this and it won't put me to sleep. There's going to be others who are like, you know what? This is just the perfect conversation and the perfect lull that will find me there.
Well, this has been a revelation, because I have done some professional vocal work in the past, and it's just been small stuff. When I was at the BBC a couple of times for radio dramas, they needed people to read the credits. So I kind of have been aware that my voice works in that environment, but I hadn't really thought too much about it. But this has been one of the strange things, and please don't anybody think this is an ego, but I get messages every day from people going, I love your voice. And I don't know why, because it's just my voice. But this is the thing that does slightly inflate my ego. I get messages going, you know, I find your voice really sexy.
Sure.
And I say this to my husband and he laughs, because he says, when you're speaking normally, it is. He says, but the voice that you do on your podcast, and it's probably the voice I'm doing now, Marco, and I'm not even thinking about it. He said, that's not your real voice. And I've said, what do you mean by that? Because it is my real voice. And he said, it's like a telephone voice. When you're speaking professionally, he said, you have a rhythm in your voice that isn't there when you're having a normal conversation. So it's not something I deliberately do. But hey, I can tell you, getting an email in the morning when you're feeling a bit fed up with the world saying, hey, you've got a really sexy voice, that can start your day off pretty well.
It certainly can. I never get those emails, by the way. So if anyone's listening who wants to send that to me, I'd be happy to receive them. Edward, I wanted to ask you a question that I asked Madonna on that day that I was at the press conference.
Okay.
I asked her, music has the ability to transcend language. What do you think her music gives people who don't necessarily understand the lyrics?
Oh, that's really interesting. I think what's at the heart of Madonna's music, and part of why she's been successful, is the melody. And that obviously does transcend the lyrics. Now, there's a really interesting phenomenon. Madonna, Kate Bush, Michael Jackson, Prince, they were all born within 6 weeks of each other.
Oh, and my goodness.
That's fascinating, isn't it? There's a few others as well, including people you may not be so familiar with, Siobhan Fahey from Bananarama and Shakespeare's Sister, and one or two others. They were all born in the summer of 1958. And I've often wondered why they all became successful, not just as singers, but as songwriters, what it is about their music. And this is going back to what I was saying about Madonna and her command of melody. I think they were the perfect generation to have been brought up on 1960s music, whether that be the remnants of rock and roll and the Beatles and the Stones, into Motown, and then into that early 70s music, certainly with the UK artists, they would have been influenced by glam rock and, you know, bands like David Bowie, so artists like David Bowie and bands like Roxy Music. Over in the States, I think it's very much more about things like the Spinners and all that really melodic right. music into disco. And I think these people we're talking about that were born in the summer of 58, they hit the mark perfectly to absorb all that, so that when they started writing music in the end of the 70s and the early 80s, they were their threshold, their creative threshold, was to do melodies as good as that, but with all the new technology and everything else they'd learned. And I think Madonna's melodies really, really stand out. And one of the things that I've discovered, and you asked me what I discovered through the podcast, is listening to interviews with, or reading interviews with her collaborators, who'll say they'll just write three chords, they'll, you know, whatever it is, and Madonna will pick a melody out of the air and it will just be the perfect melody. And I think that's what's at the heart of her songs. And then you know, we often think of Madonna as being a dance artist because she's got those big dance hits,
sure,
like Holiday and Music and you know, Ray of Light and Vogue. But she's also known for those ballads. Many of them have ended up as movie soundtracks as well, like I'll Remember, I mentioned Live to Tell, and songs like that. She has a great variety, but at the heart of all of her songs, I think, is melody. Does that answer your question?
It does. I remember you also referencing where she was born in Michigan near Motor City, yeah, and the music that was going on around the time that she would be growing up and how that may have influenced her as an artist.
Oh, I think so, definitely. And I tell you, someone else who was a massive influence on her was David Bowie. So she would have been about 12, 13 at the time that he first came to prominence, very much in the UK and, of course, in the US as well. And she snuck out in the mid-70s from her parents' home in Michigan to see his concerts. And she was very, very heavily influenced by what she saw. And if you think about it, she, very much like David Bowie, took a lot of that on board. She became a bit of a chameleon.
Sure.
Always had a different look. His shows were unlike other musical shows. You know, it was much more of a theatrical performance. He'd often have personas and themes to the concerts, and she did that with her shows as well. So she's somebody who's absorbed everything around her, and I think growing up in Michigan at that period will have really sort of infused itself upon her, and that's kind of what made her what she is today, without a doubt.
What impact do you think Madonna has made to the music industry that she doesn't get enough credit for?
Well, it's good and bad, really, because mm-hmm. I think she broke down the barriers for female artists without a doubt. And that, you know, she was very provocative early on. She was very much her own person. She was a bit scary, I think, for some people. But she was able to be a woman who was in control of herself. And in the 90s, she made that a very sexual thing. And we, you know, I'm sure even if you're not a big fan of Madonna, you'll be aware of her sex book and the Erotica album.
Of course.
And really pushing stuff there. And also, she did similar things for gay rights and even adopted a period of sexual ambiguity herself. And what that has done is allowed modern female pop stars to embrace that and sort of be able to be comfortable with their sexuality in a way that they couldn't have done, because she definitely was the first person to do that and be successful. Now, the reason I say good or bad is I think that also has the potential to go the wrong way, because what Madonna did was to say, I can be feminine and I can be sexy, but I'm still strong and I'm still in control. Right. And I do worry that some young artists, and I'm not thinking of anyone in particular, but there are some that I've seen are using their sexuality, but maybe not in control in the way that Madonna was. And so I think they might still be be being exploited by the industry in some way. I don't mean in a very bad way, but I think they're not taking the pure essence of what she did. But without a doubt, she's challenged some viewpoints and made things a lot easier. And there's a number of occasions where she could have, you know, it nearly killed her career. When she went on the David Letterman show with Sandra Bernhardt, I think in about 1989, and they pretty much flirted with each other, that could have killed her career. And,
right.
You know, particularly it's different in Canada, but it's still quite conservative, but very much so in the United States, as you know.
Right.
And so she didn't end her career there. There's been a few occasions where she nearly did. But I think it's she kind of wants to be successful, at the same time doesn't really care. So that's kind of how she's managed to get away with it all the time.
Did you happen to see that clip of her on Jimmy Fallon doing a more ballady version of Borderline?
I did. She's doing it. I think Barack Obama is in the audience as well. It's really interesting because she's singing it. Now, this is slightly technical. Maybe the musicians there will understand this. She's singing it a whole octave lower than she did in 1983,
right.
February 1983, when she first recorded that vocal. And that's partly because, well, everybody's voices age as they get older, and she may not be quite able to hit that high note. But also the vocal training that she did in the mid-90s, which really worked her voice for the Evita filming, she sort of discovered a whole new range, so that she had a lot more power when she sang deeper, but also when she was able to sing higher, it was less of a nasal sound and much more of a rich, full, airy sound. So I think she's just chosen, it's at the same notes as the original version, but it's a whole octave low, and it's really interesting to hear the development in her voice. And as you say, it's quite a laid-back version of the original. It's great. It's a really good performance. I think people should check it out.
Yeah,
it's one of her best songs as well, I think.
I agree. For me, when you can hear a song transform into either another genre of music, so you take it from, say, pop to rock or country, or when you can change the pace and the melody mm-hmm. of the song, or make it slower and still have the same sort of feel from the song, or a different coolness to the song, for me, that's a true test of a great song.
Oh, absolutely. Madonna does this a lot. I think she gets very bored with hearing the same versions of her songs. So if she does one of her older songs when she goes on tour, she'll often reimagine it, and it will be quite different. People may be aware that when she sang Like a Virgin on her Blonde Ambition tour in 1990, a good 6 years after it was originally released, she did it as a sort of world music version. It was very different. It had quite a, I suppose, shocking and provocative theatrical
sure.
performance, where she
right.
had two concubines on stage with males wearing conical bras as well, while she writhed around on a bed. So, you know, it was definitely reinterpreting the song quite a bit.
But I remember.
It's still,
I was at that concert. It was definitely a moment. Yeah.
Was it in Toronto? Was it in Canada? Or
they did do, well, didn't she do that on her world tour? She brought that performance. She was on a bed, and she had I just remember being in the audience and thinking, this is just intense and incredible.
Well, the reason I asked where that was is because I think famously she was nearly arrested in Toronto.
Yes.
I think she was scared that the Mounties were going to grab her afterwards because, you know, there were a lot of people were against what she was doing. Same happened when she went to Rome to perform it there, and I think the Pope had condemned her. And it's kind of crazy when you look back now, and there is that whole thing that if a man had been doing what she
right.
was doing, there would have been no problems with it whatsoever. And that's like Madonna or loathe her, she has definitely done a lot for women's rights, because I think what she's done, and I've said this already, is that she's shown that a woman can be strong but still be feminine and still be sexy. And I think a lot of feminists don't always address that. And so I think it's something quite unique to Madonna. Not unique, but something that's been very important to what she's done, is to always remain female and feminine,
yes.
but still to be equal with a man.
Is there a song of Madonna's that has had significant impact to you?
There's so many of them
okay.
that I love that I would find it hard to choose one in particular.
Then let me ask you this. Has there ever been a song that you didn't like when you first heard it that you now have grown to love?
Oh, definitely. Do you know what? I've mentioned this song already, so it feels a bit crass to say it again, but Vogue. When I heard Vogue, I was really not impressed at all because she'd just done the Like a Prayer album, and that was, you know, transcended her creative abilities. But it's got a very live sound. It's all live drums and a lot of guitars and bass. There's a lot of synth in there as well, but it's kind of a very sort of retro synth, 70s type of synth in those songs. And then out she comes with Vogue, which felt like the kind of house track that everybody else was doing at that time. It didn't feel particularly original. I was like, oh, okay, well, you know, let her do this and maybe she'll do something else. And of course, within a very short period of time, I realized that no, it is an incredible song. It's an incredible production. It kind of was what everyone was doing, but this is something that is very much what Madonna does. She sort of takes the best people and does the very best version of what everybody else is doing. And, you know, working with Shep Pettibone, who was the ultimate remixer at the time, and getting him to produce a record for the first time, they, you know, they came out with a tiny bit of magic. So, yeah, Vogue would be a big sample.
For me, it was Bedtime Stories.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't love, when that song first came on, I didn't understand it. I didn't grasp it. It was just too ethereal, too not lyrical the way I expected a song to be. And now I can listen to it every day and I never get tired of it.
It's a really simple song as well. I've done an episode on that one. So if you haven't listened to it, or if your viewers haven't, do listen to it. It's a song that was written by Björk, the Icelandic songwriter, written for Madonna. And it's a very, very simple beat, very 90s house, deep house track. But her vocals are very dreamy and ethereal. The melody is not a typical melody. It's not one of Madonna's. You know, she didn't write that. She hasn't got a credit on it at all. And so it's very unusual melodically for her. And I think that's kind of what works. It's a very simple backing track, but a very haunting and slightly surreal lyric. With Madonna's straightforward pop vocals, it kind of works really well. But I agree with you. It's a fantastic track, and it hasn't really aged at all. No doubt.
I'm fascinated how you can just draw the year of every song and when it came out. That's fascinating to me.
Oh, I can do the same with Doctor Who, and I can probably do the same with ABBA. And what else am I a fan of? All sorts of things, especially when I've had to do something for work. I'm currently working on a new project for Wallace and Gromit. I'm sure you've heard of Wallace and Gromit.
Of course. In
where you are. So we're creating a new Wallace and Gromit story, but it's an immersive one that people can have on their phone. And rather than it being a straightforward TV show or film, it's augmented reality. So they'll be able to play out stories in front of them. It's got a bit of gameplay in there as well, and it's very different, unique, and a bit experimental. So I've had to become an expert in Wallace and Gromit too. I liked them before, and I think I'd seen all of the films.
Sure.
But now I know everything, and I know all the brand rules about how Gromit must be seen and all this kind of stuff. I think I'm very good at absorbing facts. I work very well with facts and rules and stuff like that.
Amazing. Might we see another podcast with another musician who you have a lot of this information from, like ABBA, as you mentioned?
Well, I have thought about it.
Okay.
And I think someone has done the research on ABBA already. I mentioned my friend Magnus, who's written a book. I feel that whatever I did on ABBA would just be recreating what all the research that he's already done. And he got to go to Sweden and listen to all the tapes from the 1970s. And so it would just be regurgitating his stuff. So I don't know that I feel passionately enough about another artist like Madonna or ABBA to be able to do that. There's lots of artists that I like, but I don't know there's anyone I feel passionately enough about it. But I am definitely interested in doing more podcasts.
Okay.
Because I've become fascinated with the genre, and I seem to be quite good at it, so maybe I've got more to offer the world. I don't know what it's going to be about, though. I'll give it some thought, but
I can't wait. It's addictive. Podcasting is addictive. I have
it's a drug.
I have four podcasts right now, but this was my first and will always be my first love. Edward, before we go, any messages you have for your fans?
For my fans?
Yeah, for your fans.
I don't know that I've got fans, but I'm sure there's fans of Madonna that like listening to my podcast.
Okay.
So if they happen to be listening to this as well, or perhaps there's some of your listeners that will become fans of my podcast.
Sure.
What would I like to say to them? I'd like to say, you know, thank you for being positive and being open, because music and anything creative is never factual. And a lot of the time it's an opinion. And, you know, a lot of the things I do in my podcast are my opinion. I've been quite open when I feel that Madonna failed in something, that, you know, one of her songs wasn't the best. And obviously I've done the opposite, where I think she's been very, very successful. And people have been very open to that. I've never had people writing strongly worded emails to me or starting a campaign against me. And I know it sounds silly, but I had a bit of a fear that might happen. So thank you for that. And actually, thank you to everyone that's come along for the ride with the podcast and interacts with it on social media and is enjoying the journey. And I'll keep it going for as long as I've got the energy and the Madonna songs to do it. And I really hope that somebody has listened to your podcast and it's helped them get rid of some of their anxiety and they're going to sleep better. But also, they're going to be checking out my podcast in the morning.
You can find all the links on our show notes. Edward Russell, thank you so much for being a part of the Insomnia Project.
Thank you for having me.
I am going to extend a standing invitation. When your book comes out or when your new podcast comes out, you're always welcome to be a guest on our podcast.
I'll be in touch, definitely.
And definitely listen to Inside the Groove. And I think you'll get something out of it. Very valuable. I certainly have. I've learned a lot. And I've discovered songs that I didn't even know of Madonna that I love, including Masterpiece, which I think your podcast is.
Oh, thank you. That's very
kind.
You're welcome.
Everyone else who are listening, I hope you enjoyed today's podcast. As always, we hope that this helps you and perhaps that you were able to listen and sleep.